Please be seated. Do we have our... Great, thank you. We are utilizing Zoom this morning, so we want to make sure it is working, and I understand it is. I'm Chief Judge Bonnie Bulla of the Nevada Court of Appeals, and with me today in Las Vegas is Judge Michael Gibbons and Judge Deborah Westbrook. While I do not anticipate any problems, because counsel will be, at least one counsel will be participating by Zoom, I would ask that everyone be mindful of that when asking questions or responding to them. This is the date and time set for oral argument in case number 88638 in the matter of Sotelo versus Sotelo. Participating via Zoom, we have Erica Pike Turner on behalf of the appellant, and participating in Las Vegas, we have Ashley Vasquez on behalf of the respondent. And I do not see anyone at council table, so we will move ahead. Each party is limited to 15 minutes of argument. Ms. Turner, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
3 minutes, thank you.
Thank you so much. Ms. Turner, you may proceed.
All right, thank you, and thank you for accommodating me via Zoom. There's really three issues at play here. One is the decree's determination that sole and separate property of Paulina Sotelo, it was community property. Number two was the decree and post-decree orders for the sale of the property without any finding of equity in the home, let alone community equity, and staying alimony pending the sale. Those three things are really why Ms. Sotelo's appeal was filed and why we're here today. With respect to number one, that the court erred by concluding Paulina's sole and separate property, subject of Randy's quitclaim deed of his interest to Paulina during marriage, was community property. And what happened was the district court did not take into account the carve-out from NRS 123.220. And that carve-out is at NRS 123.130. It's expressly indicated as a carve-out in the NRS 123.220. And the effect of the carve-out is when property is purchased during marriage, instead of presuming that it's community property, this carve-out provides that if the marriage acquired after marriage was by gift or devisement, then it will be considered, there will be a presumption that it will be considered a spouse's separate property. Here, Randy Sotelo quitclaim deeded his community interest, really all interests, in property purchased after the marriage, to Paulina. And the district court did not address that quitclaim deed. He knew about it. It was in the briefing that was requested by him prior to trial. The quitclaim deed was provided by Paulina, and he ignored it. He ignored the effect of it.
Ms. Turner, do you mind if I ask a quick question? Did Paulina ever introduce the deed of trust or quitclaim deed into evidence at the trial?
She did not.
Okay.
There was the pretrial briefing, and then at the trial, the district court came out and said, all right, we have some outstanding disputes. Counsel for Randy said the community or the property is community because it was purchased after the marriage.
Ms. Turner, I have one follow-up question.
Yes.
So you mentioned the supplemental briefing that the court had ordered prior to trial.
Yes.
And it was specifically related to the marital home. And yes. In Paulina's response brief, which we have in the record at JA 340 to 343, she says at the bottom of page two that the reason the title of the home was in her name was because, quote, at the time the parties purchased the home, Randy was financially unstable and indeed had been sued by Koster Finance, unquote. Isn't that an acknowledgement by Paulina that Randy was not intending to gift the property to her, but rather that they couldn't get a loan if he was on the title?
So, except that the quitclaim deed was executed by Randy thereafter, so that you have the deed, and on the heels of the deed being recorded, he quitclaimed all interest. So, at a minimum, there should have been evidence by Randy to try to rebut the presumption that it was a gift.
Ms. Turner, let me ask this question. Was the financing already secured in the marital house prior to Randy quitclaiming his alleged share of the community property to Paulina?
No, the quitclaim deed was a condition of the financing.
Was the financing then only in her name?
The financing was only in her name, yes. And that deed of trust is an exhibit to the brief that was filed by Paulina, both as requested by the court and earlier in response to a preliminary motion. It's at JA 234 through 236, Your Honor.
So once the financing was achieved, there was no change in the ownership of the property from Paulina in her separate name back to both of the parties as a marital couple.
That's right. The deed is still solely in Paulina's name. The mortgage is in her name. And the quitclaim deed has the devisement of any interest Randy has to Paulina. So the issue then becomes, and I don't think there's any dispute, there was contribution from the community to the mortgage payments and to some improvements on the property. And that's why our second issue is, well, there needed to be a determination if there was equity in the property. And if there is equity, is it community equity?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but do you believe that equity is necessary independent of whether it was separate or community property, that the court should have had the property evaluated before making any decisions with respect to the property, including the sale of the house?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why we cited to the Malmquist case and said that formula should have been applied for the determination of, one, whether there was any equity, but two, the extent of any community equity before there was an order for the sale of the house. And the Malmquist case, as that was extended by Schwartz and Baker, I don't think there can be any doubt that the court erred by not doing that analysis. He threw his hands up and said, well, we can't determine that there's any equity, so I can't make a determination of whether we can have a lump sum offset from the sale of the house to the alimony. But that elides the foundational question of is how can you order the sale of the house without knowing if there's equity? If there's a sale of the house without equity, that doesn't serve Randy because he won't get any proceeds to apply towards the alimony. And it puts Paulina in dire straits. There was testimony, an argument from Paulina, and it was undisputed. She is fully disabled on a fixed income. She can afford this mortgage from her fixed income, but she cannot go out and find a new home, let alone a comparable home for she and her children when the kids are with her. She shares custody.
Ms. Turner, can you tell me what the monthly mortgage payment was that she was expected to pay?
It was around $1,280 a month.
It was under $1,700, Your Honor. That sounds right. I'm sorry, I don't have it memorized, but it was under $1,700 a month. She does get child support. She was awarded permanent alimony, but the alimony order was stayed pending the sale of the home, which is my third issue, that if there was equity and if there was community equity, those two findings first, and then the court should have at least analyzed whether or not there should be an offset to the alimony award with the equity, as opposed to selling the home and splitting the proceeds and then having Randy pay it over to Paulina. Paulina was awarded permanent alimony, yet has received none because of the stay of the payment of the alimony until the home is sold.
Ms. Turner, is it your position that Randy could have paid the alimony independent of the home being sold, and that it should not have been contingent upon the sale of the house?
It should not have been contingent on the sale of the house because there was no determination of whether there was community equity in the home. If Randy was determined not to be able to afford the alimony, then that needed to be a separate consideration of whether too much was awarded to Paulina, or it was an amount that was impossible for him to pay. But if there was community equity in the home, certainly that could have been used to offset any obligation he had so that Paulina could keep the home and he would have an offset that was equitable. He could move on with his life and not have his kids displaced or have...
Ms. Turner, what happens because Paulina sought the stay of the sale of the home, which affected her ability to receive alimony? So by requesting a stay, she's not yet receiving the alimony. The alimony was changed to possibly lifetime alimony. The judge said permanent, but he didn't define it in the motion for rehearing. And so what happens to all those, that time period that she's not receiving alimony, if the house is sold or not sold? I mean, if it was permanent, shouldn't she be getting alimony from the beginning? And is there now back alimony that's owed? And what happens to the Supreme Court order on sale of the home that it was stayed? What do we do with that?
So to start with the first question of whether she should have received alimony from the get, yes, Your Honor, she should have received alimony from the get. The stay of the alimony payments was wrongful when there was no foundational determination that there was community equity in that home that could be used to pay the alimony. With the stay of the sale of the home that was ordered by the Supreme Court, we are asking for that stay to continue. That we've asked for the court's decree to be reversed, specifically with respect to the determination of community property, specifically relating to the order of the sale of the home and the stay of the discovery or stay of the alimony. And if there is no equity in this home, and Your Honor, Early said, or Curley, Carey, I think Early. It's K-E-R-L-E-Y, says that if there was no evidence of equity, then you don't get to have a sale of the home. If you can't show equity, you don't get an allocation of community equity. But assuming for a second that this goes back on a reversal with a remand to do an analysis, if there is equity, it would be a travesty to have the home sold in the interim without any benefit to anyone. No equity in the home, and Paulina and the kids lose the house.
Ms. Turner, you have less than 2 minutes. Would you like to reserve the rest of your time?
I will. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Vasquez?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Ashley Vasquez on behalf of the respondent, Randy Sestello. I'll first talk about the property classification. Paulina is arguing that the house was her sole and separate property. I think it was undisputed that the house was purchased during the marriage. And in our number one argument is that Paulina actually conceded that it was community property. They had entire briefing on the characterization, and at that preliminary hearing, she conceded that she understood that it was community property because community income was paying down the mortgage. It was bought during the marriage. Even in her pretrial memo, she says she understands that it is community property. However, she would like to be awarded 100%. I also want to be...
Didn't she concede that the mortgage payments were from community property and therefore there's a community interest in that, but she didn't concede the title changed. The judge never asked her about the deeds at the case management conference, nor at the trial. So that's where the gap is in this case.
It was discussed what it was titled, and he was trying to explain to her that it didn't matter if a bank account had somebody's name on it. If it was acquired during the marriage, it was considered community property, and it would be her burden to show that it was separate property. So under a recent case, Lopez v. Lopez, it was confirmed that a title alone is not enough to prove the intent that it was a gift to the...
Right, but the question here is the presumption. So had she presented at the evidence at trial of the deeds, then the burden would have shifted to Randy because it would have been a gift. So it would have been his burden to show there was no gift. It might have been easy to do, but nonetheless, it would have been his burden. And instead, at trial, the issue didn't even get discussed.
Correct. If she did that, if she made an argument that this house was my separate property, then yes, we could have changed the presumption, but she didn't. She went into knowing that it was community property. She put it in her pretrial memo. I understand this is community property. She actually argued, I want to waive my interest in his pension in exchange for his interest in the house. That was her argument. She did not ask for lump sum alimony payment in the lower court.
She was desperate to keep the house. That's her point that I got from reading this. She really, really wants to keep the house. And Ms. Turner, of course, has emphasized that today.
I agree.
So, but there's various ways to do that. You know, we talked about it briefly here today. But back to your original argument, the characterization of community property. The judge has that in the decree, and there are no findings related to it. But is that because of the way things unfolded, that they really didn't make the characterization an issue at the trial?
I think so. I don't think that the judge went into the characterization in his findings because it was, quote unquote, squashed prior to. I don't think it was no longer an issue whether it was separate or community at that point. So I don't think he went into that. The issue then became, should it be awarded to her, and is she able to? In fact, she asked for $1,200 a month in alimony plus 100% of the house. The court went through substantial findings, was very meticulous in going through their income, going through their expenses, and trying to find how they could do this. Because she argued that she should have 100% of the house in exchange for his pension, that's where his hands were tied, because there was no valuation done on what is the current value of his pension. There was one statement that was presented as an exhibit that said he would receive about $250 in 2036. And we don't know what the equity is in the house. They did talk about there could be some equity in the house, because they talked about a Zillow, which the judge found was not substantial evidence as to that value. They talked about what the mortgage statement was. I think there would be about $250,000 in equity in the house. And so Randy's interest would be $125,000. And there was no way for Paulina to pay him out that equity. And if you exchange that for her interest in the pension, that's where his hands tied, because he doesn't know what her interest in the pension is.
It's very clear on the pension that was never valued, so there's no way to determine it. But the alimony wasn't that complicated to figure out how much that would total over a projected lifespan.
Right, but that wasn't argued by either side. She did not argue She did not argue it. She did not argue to waive that his interest in the house should be for alimony. She asked for $1,200 per month plus the house. That is what she asked for. And so that is what the judge is given. He's given a set of evidence and facts and argument and doing the best that he can. And his job is to divide the equity in the house.
But
the only way
you divide it without knowing what it is,
because then he just orders that you to sell it and the equity is divided.
But maybe selling it wouldn't benefit any party.
He did. He went through this analysis. It's not in the original decree, but on the motion to reconsider, he did an even thorough analysis on how and why he did that. Is because there was community debt, and that community debt needed to be addressed. And the only way to address it was to get it paid by the sale of the house.
But doesn't he have to know what the equity is before he can determine whether the sale of the house will actually cover the debt?
I don't think he knows that it needs to know the exact value, but they did talk about approximate values based off Zillow and the mortgage balance. And the debt was $13,000, I believe. So I think it was really clear that there was enough equity in the house to pay off the community debt. And then once that debt is paid, it would be split equally between the parties. And when making the alimony award, he took that into consideration, their current incomes and their current expenses. And then once they have the sale of the house, it would eliminate their community debt, their car payments, the mortgage, and it would free up money for Randy to pay alimony, and it would reduce her expenses greatly, so she didn't need as much alimony.
I apologize for interrupting you, but I think there is a question regarding hardship, because there is a housing situation that was pointed out, and the question is, can't or shouldn't the court consider hardship, economic hardship, if the house is sold on one of the parties?
I think he did acknowledge that in the order that the order where he addressed the reconsideration. I think he went through and basically was like, this is not a wealthy family. He makes about $5,000 to $6,000 a month. She gets about $1,400 in disability. She's going to get child support. She's going to get alimony. There's just, like you said about the mortgage payment, she didn't have a way to continue to make that mortgage payment either. Hardship could be considered, because when you're considering alimony, of course, I think you can consider any other factors. But when you're talking about division of community equity, you have to divide it to the extent as fair and equitable as possible. And to not give Randy his equity in the house, that's not fair to him either.
Can you point to any place in the record where there is a clear understanding of, was there community funds used to purchase the house? Was mortgage from the community, you know, used to pay the mortgage payments, which I believe there is support for that?
I can't give you exact pinpoints, but it does show in the record that the community, whether it was her income from her account with her job income, or it was from his income, paid the mortgage. I think that was conceded on both parties.
But a party can gift. One spouse can gift to the other spouse his or her share of the community at any time during the marriage. That's not
correct.
That's allowed.
There's no evidence that anything was intended to be a gift. This was a family house. They intended to live there as a family and buy the house as a family. Of course, he couldn't be on it because of the financing purposes, but there was no intent. There was no evidence, testimony, anything given that says that Randy intended to give this house to her.
Then why didn't they quit claim deed? Why didn't she quit claim deed the half of his equity back to him? At some point, she held on to the house as her separate property for 22 years.
I don't think that people who are married, and whether happy or not, they don't think of those types of things. We see this a lot in divorce cases where one spouse buys the house and they trust their spouse. They don't think of the contemplation of a divorce in the future.
There's no dispute that she can afford the mortgage payment currently, correct?
I think so. With her disability and the child support, she can currently cover the mortgage payment, yes. But her other expenses, I have no idea.
Thank you.
One of the things the district court judge ordered was that Randy was supposed to continue paying for the existing debts. What approximately per month is that expense to him?
Correct. I don't know that off the top of my head either, but I do know that Judge Gibson Gibbons asked that too about the back alimony. I didn't think that back alimony would apply because the court ordered that he continue paying the community debts until the house sells, and I think that is supposed to.
Right. I'm not surprised to hear that from you. There's no back alimony. Frankly, I've never seen this before. The alimony was stayed pending the sale of the home, but then the sale of the home was also stayed. So here we are, you know, what, year and a half later or 2 years coming up? And has anything accrued on the alimony? Maybe not with what you just said, and yet she's not receiving it.
Correct.
But she is in the home.
My client is continuing to pay the community debt, which at the end of the day, when the house sells, that's going to be less debt for those proceeds to pay and more cash in their pockets.
And so what do you think should happen with the stay on the sale of the home?
I think that should be lifted. I think the court should affirm the district court's order and the house should be sold, that the parties should pay off the community debts, what's remaining, split the proceeds, and he can start paying her alimony.
What about the housing situation? What do we do about that?
I don't know those specific facts. They're not really before the court, except she claims she can't, which there was no evidence that she can't. I don't have those facts before me.
I just want to make sure I understand, because my understanding is the parties did brief this issue 4 months before the trial started, but the judge did not rule on the motion at that time. Is that correct? Is that what happened chronologically?
Which motion?
Didn't they have pretrial briefing on whether the house was separate or community property?
Yes, they did.
And the court never ruled on that motion, correct?
They did.
And the court did?
Yes, there was an entire order on the decision on that briefing.
When did that order come out? And can you point it?
I actually don't know if there's an order. I think it could have been court minutes, and then maybe we added that.
There's
no order that the court ever said, this is community property for these reasons. All that happened at the case management conference, the court said the presumption is that it's community property, and the fact that you made payments from your account doesn't change it. That isn't separate funds. It's actually from community sources. So that was made clear at the case management conference, but the judge didn't address the deeds at any point in time.
I don't recall that, I guess.
Well, I searched the record. I couldn't find it.
Okay. I mean, I don't know where that came. Like if we did the briefing and you're saying there's a hearing on the briefing and that you're asking if there's a court order from that briefing specifically. I'm not sure, because when I review the record, it appears that Paulina concedes that it's community property.
Right, but why isn't it in the decree then? The judge, all it would have taken is one sentence in the decree. This is community property because there's a presumption and there was no evidence presented to rebut the presumption, and you'd be done. But all it says is this is community property.
Yeah, I guess he could have done that, but I don't think that was an issue in the pretrial memo for him to consider. I know it was an issue before, but it, from the record, it looked like it was conceded and they moved on to determine how to then divide the community in that.
Well, the judge asked her during the trial twice about it, so the judge could have very well thought that it was conceded, although when you read it carefully, it's not 100% clear.
Well, the judge didn't make a specific finding on it. I think the record is clear in itself that it is community property, that there has been no evidence even presented that it was separate property or that there's even a separate property versus a community property interest.
So what happens to all the pretrial proceedings where the documents were presented at various stages, 16.2 disclosures, and then the briefing that they had after the case management conference that Chief Judge Bulla just referred to? And then the pretrial, a week before trial, the statements presented by both sides, both of them discuss it, whether it's community or separate, but somehow this issue is never addressed at trial.
It wasn't brought up as an issue at trial that it was separate property. Again, in her pretrial, she says, I understand the house is community property, but I want to be awarded 100% of it in lieu of my interest in his pension. That was her request, and the judge moves on from that.
I see your point on that. It's well taken.
Otherwise, he's taking
still,
sides.
It's on an issue that was a big issue pretrial to never have an official ruling beyond the conclusory statement, it's community property. And that's it. Move on.
I understand what your point
is. And that wasn't verbally made. That's in the written decree. That the judge didn't actually say that at trial.
I understand your point. Is that the time? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Turner, you have a minute and 38 seconds for rebuttal.
All right. Very, very briefly, with respect to the Curley 1996 case, I think it's directly on point with respect to the burden shifting with the carve-out, that with the quit claim deed, the burden shifted to Randy to show by clear and convincing evidence that he did not intend for that quit claim deed to result in a gift of his interest to Paulina. I understand the record is not clear on how it was resolved that this was property that was community interest, but I believe that there's a conflation of the title to the real estate and the equity. And that's throughout the record, there was a conflation of the two, and they needed to be addressed separately. And that's when the MelmQuest formula comes into effect, where the parties must show who has the interest in the equity in the home, if there is any equity. And it discusses the burdens of putting forth that equity. And finally, you know, we can't ignore the Schwartz case and the Daniel versus Baker case, both of which were determined to be abuses of discretion where hardships were not analyzed. There wasn't a balance of equities to determine whether or not there should be a lump sum alimony award as an offset against equity in a home where there was a needy spouse. That's the case here. And so I'm on behalf of poor Paulina, I ask that she be able to keep her home, ultimately.
Thank you very much. And we appreciate all the excellent arguments today and participating via Zoom across the Atlantic, I understand.
Yes.
And for providing us insights into the issues before us. We value your participation in today's arguments.